It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning. Welcome into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me today, Jesse Tapia. Kyle Madsen will be in just a little bit. Good morning. It's Monday. Jesse, how are you?
Doing pretty good. Vibes are up for a Monday, I guess. I don't know.
Vibes are up for a Monday. Up.
Your intro right there, was pretty high energy right there, I think.
Yeah.
Everything feels pretty good right now.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think we just realized the energy's up right now.
The energy's up. We're just going to make that determination from here on out.
I think we both had a good weekend. Maybe that's part of what it is.
Yeah, I had a really busy weekend. I don't know about you, but...
I was at a wedding on Saturday, pretty much from like about 2 o'clock till midnight, so that was pretty busy.
Okay, so we're people who do not like to schedule things.
Mm-mm.
Like, we don't like to schedule what we're going to have for dinner until like 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of times we're just like, all right, let's just go here or there. Let's go get takeout, whatever. We don't like booking out weekends. This was one of the most packed weekends that I've had in a while, and it feels like the same exact thing happened last year at this time. Were like August and September, every weekend was something.
Yeah.
That's not what I like to do.
No, I've been pretty much busy since July.
Oof.
From July to October. It's just been wedding season, my weddings, friends' weddings, fiance's friends' weddings. Everyone's getting married right now.
Yeah, you're at that age.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fun time in your life because weddings are fun. And then this group of weddings will start off another group of weddings that'll happen right afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always, for me, I remember the wedding time when everyone gets married that you know. And then, you know, like 10 years later, well, more like 7 years later, like a third of them at least have already got divorced. But then you're going to go through the kid phase where everyone's having kids and all that stuff. It's super fun age.
It's life.
Yeah, it's totally, it's life. Yeah. I'm having ear problems today, earbud problems, so... Hopefully, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out as the show goes on. Yeah, Jesse, I think also this weekend we saw a really good football game. Like, I thought the Raiders 49ers game on Saturday we had right here on ESPN 1320.
Don't forget, you catch all the Raider games this season.
Yeah, all your Raiders games right here on ESPN 1320. I thought it was a really good game. You know, like, there were some good plays, some bad plays, but overall, it looked like a competitive build-up to the NFL season.
Jake Moody. Do we have a kicker? Do you believe?
It's tough to believe when he misses one and then hits one.
Yeah, but he hit that one, though.
Recency bias.
59-yarder, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He hit that one.
So recency bias, we're once again on the Jake Moody
train. I'm going to be honest. Like, that's what caught my eye in that football game. I mean, it's preseason. Brock Purdy played decent enough. Ashton GNT got some. We'll talk about all that. He got some carries, got some yards, and all. He got his touchdown. But hey, Jake Moody, 5 of 6. Yeah, he missed one. But
yeah, but even the, like, he buried it, and you're like, hey, celebrate. Yeah, you won a preseason game. Same time, it doesn't matter how good he is, he always leaves this little bit of doubt in your mind, and you're like, can we please get someone better to compete with this guy? But I don't know if he's going to hit a 59-yarder to win a game. I guess you're going to stick with him.
Yeah, I don't know. Kicking is a tough job because it's a thankless job. To me, it's like, if I know it goes, a lot that goes into it, but if you're not making your kicks, then I'm sorry, get out of here.
Yeah, you got to go.
That's the only reason why. Like, that's your only job.
You didn't play high school football, right?
No. I was a high school soccer player. Shout out. I was kicking that soccer ball.
Well, I'm surprised that the football team didn't try to recruit.
Oh, no, there was one of those already there. There was one of those guys already there.
Okay, yeah. Typically.
No, we had a midfielder kicking for the football team.
Yeah, I think typically, like, even the last couple of years, they come to us, mm-hmm. like, with the soccer program, like, hey, we're going to need a kicker for next year.
Oh, yeah, that would not have been my job, though.
Yeah.
Go talk to someone else.
Well, my point was that if you, when you play high school football, the kickers, typically, they're not really part of the team. They go and they do their kicking thing,
yeah.
And everybody else just kind of ignores them, and you're like, oh, okay.
That's what I said, it's a thankless job. It's like...
Yeah, you're just looking
at... Dudes are out here just running back and forth full speed, and it's like, all right, come kick this through the uprights.
Well, that, and then everyone on the team, well, like, I would say like 40% of the team, believes that they could kick that field goal. Like, you're like,
which,
oh,
they're,
man,
wrong, by the way. It's not an easy job.
I don't know. Have you ever kicked a field goal?
Yeah, it's tough.
Okay, but you're a soccer player. How far could you think you can...
I've never, like, gone out and, like, just tested. I've always just... That's not my job.
Now we're going to have to figure this out. We're going to have to get a tee and we're going to...
I'm about 8 years retired now, James.
Okay, so in high school, I kicked a 45-yarder in practice because I was having a beef with a kicker, and I'm like, you know what? I can do what you're doing. No, you can't. All right. So we went out and had a kickoff, like 35-yarder. Okay, I got that. You know, 40-yard. Yeah, I got that. 45 yards, boom.
45 yards, I figure at that point, it's like, all right, yeah, James got it.
Yeah, it's a long kick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, kicking an extra point, you can just swing your leg and kick an extra point. Yeah. It's nothing. It literally, like, all you have to do is get your foot under the ball.
I saw Wes Welker make an extra point for the Dolphins once.
Oh, yeah. I think we saw this weekend, there was a backup running back that kicked a field goal, or a backup defensive back or something, and kicked a field goal for somebody. Yeah. They're like, oh, he's a backup field goal kicker.
Yeah, it makes sense. I was asking, are we back with Jake Moody?
Yeah. I guess. I guess we're backing Jake Moody. When Kyle comes in, we'll make sure we hound him about Jake Moody and see if Jake Moody's...
Well worth a third-round pick, right?
No. Absolutely not. At least they didn't do what the Raiders did when they drafted Sebastian Janikowski and drafted him in the first round.
I argue Janikowski worth.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, you don't take a kicker in the first round, but it's like Al Davis, he was on the right track. Maybe you take him in the fifth round, but it's like that was a good kicker.
Okay, but I mean, when you play fantasy football, do you have the one guy in your league that like comes up with crazy schemes every year?
Yeah,
for
that guy
draft?
Stinks.
Yeah, it's not usually good, right?
Yeah, no.
About 85% of the time, it goes really wrong. So you have the guy who decides he's going to take the number one player at every position that he can get, even when you're drafting kickers, tight ends, and we do defensive players. So in like the eighth round, he's drafting a defensive lineman literally like 12 rounds before anyone else does.
You guys are like really in the weeds though with the defensive players. We only do defenses.
Oh yeah, no, we do IDP, individual defensive players. We've done that for decades. But when you're doing that, like everyone else is loading up on second and third running backs, and you're sitting there drafting a kicker.
Yeah, meanwhile, Steve just took Carlson from the Raiders.
Yeah, or someone's getting their quarterback in the same round that you're getting your kicker. That's not a good idea. That's not a good idea. We're going to dive deep into this 49er Raiders game in just a minute. But we do have Kuminga Watch.
Hold on, I'm looking for it. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Kuminga Watch.
Yeah.
Your headphones might be... Are you good?
No, my headphones are bad today.
Oh, it just keeps
cutting out.
Okay.
Yeah. We're all right.
Okay. We're all good.
I heard it. I heard the back end of
Yeah. So One more time for James.
Kuminga Watch.
Some of Kyle's finest work right there.
Much, much better. Like my earphones are working now, which I don't know. Like every once in a while they go.
We're going to have Odyssey. This is a hit or miss around here. Sometimes the internet goes out. Sometimes the headphone jack goes out. One time Damien had his headphones in or whatever, and they literally were starting to heat up on him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Well, we had the microphone issue with Kenny forever.
Exactly that.
Which is like 80% Kenny and 20% the microphone.
For those that have been, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
For those that have been around since the first days of D'Lo and Casey, we damn near had a technical issue every day for the first 2 years of our show.
Yeah. Well, now we're in this beautiful office building and like...
Looks nicer now.
It looks nicer. We still have technical issues. Yeah. It still happens. We do have some stuff on Kuminga from over the weekend. Anthony Slater of The Athletic reported on Friday afternoon that the Warriors and Kuminga's reps had some discussions last week, but they both sit in the same exact position they were before. No one really wants to blink.
Yeah.
And to me, it looks, again, they're telegraphing what they're doing here. Kuminga wants stability. He wants an opportunity to be a star. He wants an opportunity to play more and all this stuff. And then on the other side, you have the Warriors who are just looking at him as a trade chip. And he knows that, and everyone knows it, and he's trying to get them to commit long-term to him and actually give him a position. And they're more like, yeah, we're good with our offer. And so it does look more and more like we're going to get close to the deadline, and there's a good chance he'll play for the qualifying offer.
That's what it seems like. I was holding out hope that maybe the Warriors were just bluffing at this point. It's like, yeah, fine, play for the qualifying offer, or if it can push him to shove, it's like, all right, fine, we'll take the deal with the Kings, we'll get something at least. But it seems from the article we're going to talk about right now that they're just kind of content with, you either sign our deal, sign your deal with the qualifying offer, and we'll just move forward from that.
Yeah.
As of right now, I'd say it's probably about 95% of my feeling he's a Warrior come game one?
I'm not going to buy that until it happens, because we still have the entire month of September.
Yeah.
And I think the Warriors, like, they're asking a big group of players to, like, hold on. Like, we're going to take care of you. So there's Al Horford. There's Gary Payton II. There's Seth Curry. You know, there's this group of players that they're saying, hey, look, like, if you just chill out, we're going to sign you. Trust us. We're good. We got you. Right? And that's fine and all right now. But the last weekend of September is when training camp opens this year. And media day is going to be on that last Monday. And then the first week of October, we're going to have full-on training camp and all that stuff. Those guys are going to want some stability. They're going to want to know where they're going to be. They're going to, like, they don't want something to go south. Where are they going to stay for the next year of their lives, or 6 months? So, anyway. So
it's like things like this, too. Like, Sidney Dintwenty in the chat house says the media should be seeking out Draymond Green and asking him if this is a distraction or not. And I bet he's traded within the week. I mean, do you want, Steph Curry, do you want to be, like, you brought up media day, do you want to be answering questions about what the team's looking like with Jonathan Kuminga back and just that dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think...
Not that would be a main reason to trade him, but just more so, it's just the things that come into it as well.
Yeah, I don't think you want his distraction come media day, come first week at camp, but I also, like, if he's there on the qualifying offer, his value after day one of camp is going to go to nothing with media, right? The first day, they're going to be like, oh, what happened? What happened? Are you happy with your position? You know, what, you know, what's going to go on now? After you get past that first day, Kuminga's going to be considered like the 8th or 10th guy on the roster.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. We're all going to come back to reality. It's like, oh, yeah, Steve Kerr still doesn't think he fits here, and it's just nothing with him here works.
Yeah. Yeah. So on top of the reporting from Slater on Friday, we also had Ron Krawczyk. Who's he? Is it the Chronicle?
San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah, from the San Francisco Chronicle. He got someone, an anonymous source to give a quote that I think was interesting.
Did I say that from a league source, I think?
Yeah, a league source. This is on Jonathan Kuminga. He apparently thinks he's the Cade Cunningham, Scotty Barnes level, where he should get that type of contract. It's really a quandary. I think it's bad for the Warriors and bad for him. That we'll start there. This has been the problem the entire time. The Warriors' view of Jonathan Kuminga and Jonathan Kuminga's view of himself are not in the same, like, system.
Yeah, they're completely opposite sides of the spectrum or whatever. It just does not work. One's over here, another's over here.
Yeah, the Warriors want a role player. They want Jonathan Kuminga to become Aaron Gordon.
Jonathan Kuminga wants Michael Jordan.
He wants to be, Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or name that player. He wants what Shea
gets.
He wants
to be the guy.
Yeah, Cade Cunningham. Like that. It makes sense that this is some of the holdup here that we're seeing. But also, when you look at what the Kings are offering, three-year $63 million deal, that also doesn't speak, you know, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. That's more like, hey, we're willing to take a flyer on you because we don't know what you are. And so, like, I've had someone close to me, the Warriors, tell me, hey, the second that Jonathan Kuminga is anywhere near as good as he thinks he is, he'll be a superstar. Because that's what he thinks he is. And that's going to be a problem the whole time. So,
How much does that scare you, I guess, if you were the Kings? If you're James Hamm and you're running the Kings and you're trying to get a deal done, does that bother you at all? Because it's not like you have a guy that's already kind of leading the charge here, like Steph Curry is back in Golden State. We heard Milwaukee kind of thrown around last week. They got Giannis. So, I mean, Jonathan Kuminga, and for what he wants to be, like, that wouldn't work. But for a team like Sacramento, where you're kind of lacking that main guy and searching for that and kind of just trying to rebuild in a way, like, do you take a chance on that still?
I do think you do. I think you take a chance because, like, look, there is a possibility that the Warriors are wrong and that Kuminga is right. Like, we've seen enough from Kuminga to go, oh, there's something there.
Yeah.
And if he were to get that opportunity for 82 games for 30-plus minutes a night where it's like, okay, man, you've got to deliver every single game. You've got to deliver. Maybe he does become that player. And so for the Kings, I do think it's worth the gamble, but I also, like it's a low risk gamble. I mean, like a $20 million deal, you know, where you're paying the guy $20 million a year, $21 million, whatever it is, like that's really, by NBA standards, it's not some astronomical deal.
Yeah.
It's a low risk, high reward situation. And there's a possibility that, you find like a true diamond in the rough that's just been misused, right?
Yeah, I don't think we've at least seen him get the opportunity he thinks he deserves, at least. It's been more so play a role, but for what I think he, not for I think, but for what he wants to be, it seems that he hasn't got that opportunity yet.
Yeah, but then again, he might not ever get that opportunity.
Well, like maybe a place like Sacramento, though, he could, where it finally, all right, Jonathan Kuminga, you got 30 minutes a game or whatever, where you're getting your shots and all that. Now we're going to find out.
I mean, I think that's the question mark. What does he look like in that situation? And if you give him that opportunity, does he look like a player who puts up 24, 25 a game, but his box plus minus, his offense, defensive rating are horrible? Like, just because he puts up those points, it doesn't mean that it's good for the team.
Yeah.
And if he does that and you're just a perennial loser, like, you know, there are guys who made a career out of just being a good player on a bad team. You know, Lamon Murray is who comes to mind. Like, guy scored 20 points a game a couple of times. It's like, but your team was horrible. Somebody has to score on every team. And so that's what you're trying to avoid. I even think that like a two-year run of Kuminga is difficult because year one, he could be really good, like statistically, but you could be bad because of his statistics. And you don't know if that's enough to you know, really judge him. And then you have to go into another season and say, okay, is this, can we get better with him as one of our main cogs? And the answer might be no. It very well could. Yeah. I mean, the Warriors fully could be right here. But at the same time, I think there is a way in which you can take this sort of risk. And it's not something that I think the Warriors are willing to do anymore.
It's what it feels like, but we'll see what happens. Like I said,
yeah.
I think he stays with the Warriors to start.
Yeah, we'll see. So according to Ron Krawczyk, he had Stan Van Gundy. He compared Kuminga talent-wise to Jalen Green, and he added, I would say that Franz Wagner is a winning player, also Cunningham and Barnes. I'm not sure about Kuminga. I don't see the overall understanding of the game and allows him to fit amongst other guys and help a team play well at both ends. It's a good point by Stan Van Gundy. All right, what we're going to do, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more of this. We'll dive into this Raiders 49ers game. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in just a minute. Welcome back into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me, Jesse Tapia. We have got Kyle Madsen showing up in just a little while. He's going to hang out with Kenny Caraway today on D'Lo and Casey. So just a little switcheroo. We're, of course, the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. If you're just hanging out and you're listening in your radio, you can jump on board on YouTube at youtube.com/ESPN1320. You can find us on Twitch. You can find us on X.
Everywhere. You don't have an excuse not to listen to the show unless you just hate us.
You can download the Odyssey app and take us with you everywhere.
Unless you hate James Hamm, Jesse Tapia, Kyle Madsen, Damian Barling, Kenny Caraway, Joe Brazil.
Yeah, like, Joe Brazil.
Unless you hate us all, then you should be listening to us.
I would agree. You have no excuse because you can literally take us with you everywhere you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. So hopefully you are out there. Let's finish up this conversation with Kuminga before we dive into some football talk. I think this statement by Jeff Van Gundy is really interesting because if Scotty Barnes' camp, someone in Jonathan Kuminga's camp is going to compare him to Cade Cunningham, Scotty Barnes, and realistically, all of the players taken in his draft. So if you look at the players at the top end of the Kuminga draft, most of those guys are already, they've already got their contract, right? They've already secured their financial stability from here until whenever. And for Kuminga, he's looking around saying, hey, like, why not me? And part of the reason why not me is because he hasn't figured out a way to fit into some system. So Cade Cunningham got a max money deal. Jalen Green got a 3-year, $100 million deal. Evan Mobley got $150 million. Scotty Barnes got $150-plus million. Jalen Suggs, $150-plus million. There's only two guys here. And number six is Josh Giddey. Number seven is Kuminga, but Franz Wagner is number eight. And he already got paid. So all of the other guys around these players, so Giddey and Kuminga are the two restricted free agents, they've all gotten paid. And
those other guys that you just read off, they got paid too, all with their original team, correct?
Yes, all of them with their original teams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we get to number nine where the Kings drafted, and this is where that draft really starts to actually go super sideways. Davion Mitchell is number nine, Zaire Williams number 10, who's, you know, in and out of lineups. James Bouknight's out of the league. Josh Primo, out of the league. Chris Duarte, out of the league. Number 14 is Moses Moody, and then Corey Kispert, then Alperen Şengün, and Trey Murphy. There's like, this is what NBA drafts look like, right? There's so many hits and misses in the top 15 in the lottery, and I don't know, we don't know yet if Kuminga's a miss or not.
He's not those other guys that are getting paid, I'd say that.
Yeah, he's not.
I think it does say something that, like I said, like I brought up, those guys are still with the original teams. There's a reason why Giddey and Kuminga aren't. Like, not saying Giddey's a bad player or anything like that. Kuminga are bad players, but just more so they didn't work out the way, I guess, they were drafted to be.
Well, they weren't so good that you were willing to hold on to them, exactly, knowing that you had, like, up to 8 to 9 years of team control.
Yeah.
There's a point where you said, yeah, we think we can get better going a different direction. And to be honest with you, the Warriors are there with him. They are. They're there with Kuminga, where they're willing to go a different direction. But the problem that they have is that the only way to secure a, like, sort of a player around $20 million bucks that they can trade is to bring him back. And they're trying to limit the damage that they do to their salary cap while they're waiting to make some other trade with him. And he's not down for that. So I think, just to get back into the Stan Van Gundy comment, you know, I think it really does strike home that he's like, I don't see the overall understanding of the game that allows him to fit amongst other guys and help a team play well at both ends. Like, he hasn't shown the ability to accept whatever role it is that a team wants him to be. And sometimes, you know, that's, again, that's okay, because you might be way better than they're allowing you to be, but it also is a good way to find yourself out of the NBA.
Yeah, like, with those things, it just kind of comes down to, like you said, like, who's right and who's not. Because if you kind of pigeonhole Kuminga into this role where it's like, all right, you're going to kind of play off to the side and we're going to be around Steph, but Kuminga has this whole another level he can hit, like, you kind of understand that, I guess. It's we don't know is the whole point of all this. We don't know actually what Kuminga is. If you listen to the Warriors, he's a guy who doesn't play his role, doesn't do this, doesn't fit in, anything like that. You listen to Kuminga, he's a guy who has been off-cast and has all the potential in the world to be what Cade Cunningham and Scotty Barnes are and things like that. It's just a matter of if you want to take the risk or not.
Yeah, but I think the problem is we're 4 years into the project already.
But yeah, has he gotten the right opportunity yet? Has he gotten the right chance, though, is the thing.
Well,
the Warriors can tell us, yeah, he has, but also Kuminga can tell us, no, I haven't.
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah, we're 4 years in, but like, you're 4 years in with a player who you've asked to be a role player.
Yeah, but I think the problem is that by NBA standards, like, you should have shown that you were so good that they couldn't keep you off the court. And he hasn't. He hasn't been able, and I get it.
Steve Kerr kept Jason Tatum off on the bench in the Olympics. Like,
no, that's true.
Like, Steve Kerr is stubborn in the sense where it's like, it's my way or the highway. We've seen Jonathan Kuminga go out and get 20 a game and things like that, but if it's not going to fall into the lines of the Warriors' game plan, then Steve Kerr's just flat out not interested.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, and I mean, I get it. You know, every coach is going to have their demands, mm-hmm, and they're going to ask you to do certain things, and if you can't live up to those things, then you're not going to play. You're going to have diminishing returns. You're going to play less and less and less. And so, for me, like, I do get it, but again, like, players who walk in the door and are way better than their draft position or just stand out, like, they get an opportunity. And the one thing I will say for Steve Kerr, he's been the one running practices for 4 years. he gets to see every bit of Jonathan Kuminga that we don't. And I'm sure they've tried some things. So there's always going to be some apprehension. And again, the Warriors could be wrong. But, you know, again, I think when I look at Kuminga, he's starting to fit more into the Marvin Bagley role as a player. I know people...
That's tough. That's...
Yeah, but the guy averaged 14-7 the first 3 years of his career.
Oh, I know. I get that. But I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that.
When you watch Marvin, do you think, man, that dude still has a ton of ability and potential?
Well, I don't watch Marvin much anymore. But,
when you do, yeah. You go, oh, my goodness. Did you see that?
Yeah, I guess. But also, like, I don't know. Like, Marvin Bagley is definitely what we're talking about. What Jonathan Kuminga could be like. Marvin Bagley is that, but I'm not so sure that Jonathan Kuminga is. I don't, because like Marvin Bagley was brought here to be a guy and all those things. He couldn't stay on the court. There's a lot more of that stuff and all that, but I feel like Kuminga's just been, if you look at him, he's been limited, I guess. I don't see that he's gotten the opportunity. I'll say that.
Okay.
I think that's where I'm at, right? He just hasn't gotten the opportunity for us to see.
We're going to have to wait and see. I don't know if this thing is ever going to get resolved, but until it does, we'll have Kuminga watch as much as possible, just so we're tracking and seeing what's going to happen. Because, again, if he is going to get traded, the odds-on favorite, it's still the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, we got the sounder. We got a hit, so we're going to make use
Kuminga
of it.
Kuminga watch.
There it is, Kuminga watch. Let's get into this Raiders 49er game.
Ball's almost here. I can't wait.
So the San Francisco 49ers win 22-19. Jake Moody hits a 59-yard bomb, kick.
Kyle Shanahan vindicated for his draft pick.
Yeah, completely vindicated. The 49ers carry him off the field. He had just missed, right, from 53?
Yeah.
Like a couple of minutes before. And we're in a dome, right?
Looked like it was the San Francisco, or it looked like it was Niners home game.
Yeah. Interesting stuff there, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is always how it's going to be, I guess. Vegas is a destination spot, so...
It is a destination spot, and I think a lot of Raiders fans are like, hey, we'll just save up for the regular season. We don't need to be there for a preseason game. And if you're a 49er fan, you're like, hey, why not...
Let's go to Vegas for the preseason.
Yeah, let's go to Vegas for the weekend for the preseason. Who cares? We had a list of things that we wanted to see from this game, and we talked about it on Friday. And for me, the biggest thing, the top of the list was Nick Martin. I need to see Nick Martin look like an NFL player. I thought he did.
He's got some speed to him.
Yeah.
I was watching some of his plays, his highlights and all that. He's got some speed where he's always, wherever he was always right next to the football. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was one where he overran. I think it was like a, I don't want to call it a screen, but the running back, whoever was tight end, might have just dumped out to the left or whatever and kind of overran him. But he's just always there and he's quick.
He
looked good. He looked good on Saturday.
Yeah, he had to play the sack up the middle.
Yeah.
He busted through the line and like twist and turn fighting through a offensive lineman and got to the quarterback. Like, there is a ferociousness that he plays with, and it does, like, it's kind of like what Dre Greenlaw would do, where Dre Greenlaw, like, flew all over the field. I mean, you would watch Dre Greenlaw, like, fly over the top of piles of people on the ground all the time. He just, like, is a guy who had a knack for being around the ball, but also being able to get to the ball while going full speed. Nick Martin, he's got some of that, but he's got a lot of refinement to do here.
Yeah, he's got ability, so I think that's just what you kind of get excited about. And then, of course, like you said, you got to build off of that now.
Yeah, yeah. The second thing that we had brought up, can the defensive line start to gel? I thought this was a much better effort. They held the Raiders to 77 yards rushing. Of course, Ashton Jeanty didn't play a ton.
Like 7 carries, 30-something yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, 7 carries, 33 yards and a touchdown. But he played enough where... when the other guys stepped on the field, they didn't really go anywhere. Like, the Niners' defensive line was pretty solid. I don't think, again, it was like an A-plus game. But for preseason and a low-scoring preseason game, I do think that the Niners' defensive line did enough to show you that, hey, there's potential there.
Yeah, you'll take it. That group's going to go as far as Nick Bosa takes them this year.
Yeah. No, I think that that's always... And they need him to be excellent.
We've all been kind of waiting on him to show up since that 2019 year. And I don't mean show up in the sense where it's like, oh, yeah, be a good player, but more so everyone thought you were going to be a Myles Garrett tier type player, and it just hasn't been that since.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that when we're watching, you know, again, a defensive line try to grow and try to mold into something, the one thing that you're worried about is that they're not going to get enough pressure on the left side. They're not going to get enough pressure up the middle. And teams are just going to stack the line against Bosa. And that's going to be a problem. They can keep switching Bosa from one side to the next, but if they don't have pressure or if they don't have someone else who can, you know, run some stunts to freeze up Bosa, he could just get basically locked up. And that's, I think, what the 49ers should be wary of. So hopefully they do get some pressure. The one thing I'll add to this, Robert Saleh is running blitzes, and I'm just not used to watching the 49ers blitz a quarterback.
It's nice, huh?
It's like a dream come true, you know, and like...
There's nothing worse in the NFL than a defensive coordinator is like, all right, all we're going to do is rush four the whole game. We're not going to throw any kind of crazy schemes, anything, just going to rush four. Everyone else, do your job. Like, that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. It's horribly frustrating.
Give me the Brian Flores, line everyone up at the defensive, at the line of scrimmage. All right, we're going to trick the quarterback. The corner might blitz here. The linebacker might drop off into coverage. We're just going to scare you the whole time. Do more of that.
I agree. I'm super, super excited to see what Saleh has planned for this year. I think he's got a couple of young defensive backs that are showing an ability to fly in on blitzes.
We talk about Nick Martin.
Nick Martin as a, you know, linebacker up the middle. You can send him. Lucas had a sack, one of their defensive backs, a young player. You know, I thought that, like, overall, it just feels more functional. And to me, that's how you're going to free a Bosa eventually. If there is the fear of somebody else coming from a different angle,
yeah,
you're going to see more and more of them not be able to stack the line against Bosa on one side and sort of limit him. So I'm excited to see what that looks like.
That's a good point. I mean, a lot of people were excited about Robert Saleh being back. Defense the last few seasons has been kind of hit or miss depending on who you talk to.
Yeah, it's been pretty suspect. I mean, honestly, Saleh is probably their biggest acquisition during this offseason.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have to see what all those young players do. We had the question, how does Shanahan manage his lineups? I thought this was really good. Like, he had... Brock Purdy got the first drive of the game. He was, like, for the most part, spectacular. There is something about Purdy when you watch him play. It's almost unnerving how calm he is. And you're just like, man, you...
That's been one of his kind of key qualities, I think, since he came into the league.
Yeah.
I remember that first game we played Miami. I was there. One of the worst days of my life. There was like a third and 10. Jalen Phillips is just right in his face, untouched. And Brock Purdy just... Right to George Kittle for a first down, as if it just didn't bother him at all.
Yeah, he had the 3rd and 19 play and just throws a dart. Every pass that he threw, it almost looks like he's in slow motion. He's just moving around, and then it's just like a perfect ball to a perfect spot. And, you know, is it Justin Herbert firing a ball? No.
And that's okay, by the way. These quarterbacks don't all have to be that.
No, they don't.
There's other ways to play the position.
Well, that, and I'm pretty sure Brock Purdy has won a whole hell of a lot more games than Justin Herbert at the NFL level, and especially in the playoffs.
But hypothetically, if I gave Justin Herbert all of these players, James, hypothetically, he'd be the greatest quarterback of all time.
That's right. But then when Brock Purdy loses all of his players, you want to blame Brock Purdy for not being very good. There seems to be this really, really like large rock and a hard space that Brock Purdy is stuck between.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter what you do.
He can't win.
No, you can't win. Yeah, and now it's like, oh, well, you paid him. He better be that guy. It's like, okay, well, he better be that guy with his best receiver with a blown ACL. His second best receiver has a calf injury and also wants a new contract. His third wide receiver, oh, he got shot last year, and he's a second-year player who barely played at all in his rookie season.
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot of things that are very, very suspect about what's going on with the 49ers. Oh, by the way, their offensive line... It's not good at all.
See, which is great for people like me who have said, yeah, Brock Purdy's actually really good. He's been really good. So I could say continue being that good despite all of these issues.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's got a ton of skill, and I enjoy watching Brock Purdy play. It really, like, there are very few quarterbacks that sit in the pocket and just look calm for most of the time. I did not like last year where he started running around, scrambling, doing all kinds of crazy. But this year, just watching him in the first drive, I thought his connection with Pearsall was spectacular. And it's like, look at him find Pearsall all over the field. All right. Well, hey, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. We got a few more 49ers takeaways. We've got a few more Raider takeaways, but plenty to talk about here on the Insiders. I am James Hamm. He is Jesse Tapia. Welcome back into the Insiders. Jesse, we're sitting here talking about the 49ers 22-19 win over the Las Vegas Raiders on Saturday. There were things that stood out from the previous game that I think had to be cleaned up. And one of those things, I thought Brock Purdy, you know, stepping in, taking the first series, it allowed Mac Jones sort of like to have the opening, you know, the first inning pitcher type deal, where Mac Jones just looked way more comfortable. He threw a bad ball for a pick, but overall I thought he was really good outside of that. And he has a calmness to him in the while he's dropped back as well. There's just like a composure that he has. Doesn't have a big arm, but you know,
he does not.
But I think it's still effective. Like, he can be effective as a backup quarterback.
Yeah, he's a career backup quarterback.
And he's game manager.
Yeah, and I think I wouldn't even call him that. Either way, I don't want to dump on Mac Jones too much. He's a fine backup quarterback, I think. He'll be in the league about 15 years. If you need him to play 5 games or whatever, like, that'll be fine. But if you need him to play a season, like, yeah, it's going to be tough.
Oh, yeah, you're in trouble. Yeah, but, I mean, I think the same thing about, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo.
I paused on game manager because, like, isn't Jalen Hurts in a way a game manager and stuff like that? Like, the way they play? Like game manager, it means more than it used to. Like, game manager.
I guess.
Kyle Madsen looked at me all weird in the studio. I don't know. I don't know if I'm wrong. Maybe he agrees. Either way, game manager is not what it used to mean. Like, Mac Jones is not a game manager. He's the quarterback. We can't throw the football like 20, 30 yards down the field.
I still think, though, he understands his limitations. And that's where I think he manages who he is.
Are you saying he manages how bad he is, James?
No, just who he is. Like, he gets who he is and okay, like, look, I've got to be really, really precise here because I don't have the big arm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's weird to watch because it's not like it's incompetence. You see that there's somebody who understands a job, but also who's just not great at the job.
Yeah.
So that's where it's kind of tough.
Oh, I got you. I think we should prop up game managers a little bit more.
Okay. Like the Trent Dilfers of the world.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Trent Dilfer, like I said, like fine, Trent Dilfer was a game manager, but like now the game managers are a lot better than what they used to be. Now that means a little more.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I buy it.
Damn, Brock Purdy's up game manager down there.
Yeah. We had the question, too, will Carter Bradley look like an NFL player?
That's your guy. I'm attaching him to you.
You can't attach him to me.
I don't know if anyone has talked more Carter Bradley than James Hamm.
Well, watching a guy who's a third quarterback, you're like, oh, no, no.
No, I get
find
that.
Someone else. Yeah, he just had no concept.
The 49ers ran out of quarterbacks in the NFC Championship game, so...
Yeah,
I get being scarred.
I don't want a Josh Johnson
I get that. That's
situation
been
all over again.
I get it.
Yeah. Then we asked a question, can someone step up at wide receiver? Again, early in the game, I thought the Pearsall-Brock Purdy connection was incredible. Like, they were just in sync, and it looked like Ricky Pearsall was able to create a ton of space everywhere he went.
I think our guy Thor Nystrom on Friday we were talking to said that's the one he's looking at in fantasy football. He's looking at Pearsall, not Juwan Jennings.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting to hear that take from an outside mm-hmm. perspective from somebody who lives in Minnesota. And then to watch it play out exactly. I mean, of course, Juwan Jennings isn't there because of the calf injury, so you're not able to sort of put him in the same... like to compare apples and apples, but when we're watching him play, Pearsall just looks smooth. He just looked like, again, someone who can create space and who one of those players that seems like he's always open and you're like, huh, look at that. That's a good trait to have. It's about route running.
As a wide receiver. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? There's like, how many games did you watch where you're like, hey...
Well, yeah, Deebo Samuel was not someone who really created much separation.
No, he was never wide... Well, yeah. I mean, there are times he's wide open, but for the most part, no. Mm-hmm. But then you watch Cooper Kupp play, and you're like, okay, there's one guy on the field catching every ball, and he's still wide open.
The Rams scheme their players up so well to get wide open. Kenny Caraway thinks that they could scheme him up to get wide open on the football field.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's
just
what it
to
felt
reinforce
like
your point.
That's what it felt like with Ricky Pearsall. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, look at that. Like, wide open. Yeah, so, like, super impressive. And then Robbie Chosen stepped up, had 5 for 92. I don't know, again, if he's even going to make the team. This is, of course, the also known as Robbie Anderson.
Yeah, formerly known as Robbie Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. So, but 5 for 92, at least you've put yourself in the competition for one of the wide receiver spots.
He's got talent. It's just at this point in his career, or even in 2025, I don't... Is it useful for the 49ers? Like, he's been around. We talked about it last week when he was Robbie Anderson. It's like, hey, that guy's pretty good on the Carolina Panthers. When he was Robbie Chosen the last couple of years, like, yeah, not so great. I just can't stick around.
Well, I think what you're hoping...
There's just talent, but just, I don't know.
Yeah, between him and Russell Gage, you're hoping that you can get enough NFL talent at the wide receiver position to hold you over until either Cowing gets 100% healthy and starts playing well, or Jennings gets 100% healthy, or heaven forbid, you got to run these guys out there until, you know, Brandon Ayuk is back in week 5, week 6, whatever.
Yeah.
Barring setback, who knows when he's going to be back officially. But it does feel like that might be what they're trying to do here. Just buy us some time.
Maybe, stick around as a wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, and then, I mean, he'll probably get cut at the end of the year.
Maybe.
Maybe during the season.
He'll probably get cut sometime during the season, right?
That's just the way those things go.
Outside of that, let's see. Oh, one of the other takeaways I had, the young secondary guys look really good. And whoever is in charge of scouting defensive backs and safeties, I thought Lucas looked great. He had the sack. He also had a pick. I guess he watched a whole bunch of film for this game, and he promised Trent Williams he would get an interception and bring him the ball, and he did. And eventually gave Trent Williams the ball, who then gave the ball back to him. But, good story, because it feels like also Lucas and then Siegel, and then, you know, they're starting to build some momentum with that defensive backfield, which is good. So I think that stood out really strong. And anytime you can restock the defensive backfield without, going first round, second round.
Well, you elevate your secondary, too, if your defensive line's getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're attacking the quarterback, then that's only going to make the secondary better.
Yeah, but if they're not getting to the quarterback, that defensive backfield better be good, right?
Yeah.
On top of that, we get the Raiders. So I thought, like, our biggest question, you know, again, Ashton Jeanty, we know Ashton Jeanty's really good, right? But his first game, he had -1 yards rushing on 3 carries. He went for 7 for 33 and a touchdown. He also ran over Lenore, just punishing runner for a guy who's not very big, and he looked more and more like the top tier back that we've heard.
Is it crazy if I draft him in the first round this year in fantasy football?
Okay, so
I'm just asking. I'm not saying I'm going to, but I'm just asking.
I would have said yes. It would. Well, no, it wasn't crazy. But how high are you going to draft him?
If I were to do it, I think probably late first round.
Okay, so
early first round, I'd probably lead more wide receiver and stuff like that. But late first round, maybe the Justin Jefferson, the Jamar Chases are gone. Ashton Jeanty's right there. I mean,
I think especially if you have a keeper league, which is something we asked Thor on Friday. If you have a keeper league, then yeah, he should be one of your top tier picks.
Yeah.
Because he's going to get a ton of carries, and that's probably going to be the case for a couple of years, right? Where you can build around him as like one of your offensive stars. Watching him, I think for me, the biggest thing for fantasy football owners is that they gave him the ball in the red zone and let him score a short yardage touchdown. Because I think in the back of my mind, you know, they have other running backs, and those other running backs, you know,
they vulture TDs.
Yeah. We heard Pete Carroll talk about it early on about how, you know, how great some of Zamir White looks great. And, you know, Mostert is a guy who had, how many touchdowns did he have 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Like 22, 20 something. Like,
yeah.
That might be a little high. He led the league in touchdowns. That's the whole point.
I think it was around over
there.
20.
Yeah, it was around there.
But either way, if you're going to have that, you're worried that he's going to snipe touchdowns, especially early on. Mm-hmm. So they preserve Jeanty in short yardage back situations. Nope, that's not what happened. Now, it might be a preseason, like, overanalyzing deal, but if he's going to get, you know, first and goal at the one or third and goal at the one carries, that's huge. That's huge. So, he could easily be like a 12 to 15 touchdown guy in a rookie season and prove out to be one of the top, a very, very high top tier back.
Yeah, he's a little over 4 yards of carry on Saturday. So I think for the Raider fans and I guess for us wanted to see something. We saw a little something there.
Yeah. He also caught one pass, I think, for 2 yards. I think we're not seeing that in preseason, but I think we will see that in the regular season. Again, to go to Thor Nystrom, I thought that that was one of the things that he brought up that was really intriguing, how Genty was a slot receiver as a junior in high school, then became superstar running back, and then when he got to Boise State, he did the same thing. He didn't do the same exact thing, but he was a runner and a pass catcher in his first couple of years, but then for his final year, they stripped away a lot of the receptions and said, we're going to go for Barry Sanders' record. And that's where you start to see him like take off as a crazy, crazy top tier running back. I think that there's still a lot of that left. Like there's still a wide receiver hiding in there.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to showcase that too much in the preseason.
No.
Like a lot of it is vanilla and basics right now.
No, I think so too. Yeah. We also, you know, how does Pete Carroll manage his backfield? That was one of our questions. It looked like Ashton Genty and everyone else.
Yeah, it's the way it should be.
Yeah, I think.
I love Raheem Mostert, Miami Dolphins legend.
He did not look good.
Yeah, he's old, man.
He is old.
He's got at least 33, I'd assume. At least.
It was crazy. I think it was Guy Haberman who was talking about it on the broadcast. Shout out to Guy. He's a very, very cool dude.
Yeah, Raheem Mostert is 33, by the way.
Yeah. And he brought up that Mostert was a special teams guy for the 49ers for like 3 years before he got to play a bunch of running back. And then when he did get to play running back, he was incredible. He was electric. And then he just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the same thing in Miami. He had the one big season, but outside of that, it's like he
had some fumble issues last season.
Yeah, yeah, tough. And then Dante Thornton, can he solidify himself as number three? There was nothing really to report there. He did go... they stretched the defense with him at one point, and it wasn't a good throw, I believe, and defensive back was on him. But I still think that that player who can stretch the defense and that you don't mind going up top to kind of stands out.
This is kind of a low-key X-factor thing for the Raiders this season because you got Brock Bowers, who I guess now we can insert tight ends into this. Like, he's the wide receiver one, if you want to call him. He's going to get most of the targets, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got Jacoby Myers, who will come in after that. Ashton Genty is going to lead the backfield, and then you're just kind of looking for a guy like maybe Thornton here to just solidify himself and just shore himself up as that third option for the Raiders. Because if you got that and you're consistent in that area, I like their offense this season.
Yeah, almost like when the Cowboys were incredible. You know, they had Jade Novacek, but you know they also had Michael Irvin. They had Emmitt Smith running the ball a ton, but then that team really was aided a lot by having Alvin Harper on the outside.
Yeah.
Who just like blew the top off defenses all the time. So it's a good thing to have. Hopefully he's able to develop. He looks like a really young and exciting wide receiver. Overall, I thought, again, it was a really good, hard-fought football game. It was fun to watch. It wasn't a standard preseason game where one team is running their starters out there way longer or their second team way longer than the other team. It almost felt like there was a gentleman's agreement about, hey, we're going to switch lineups here, and here, which I thought was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even like the 49ers' first preseason game, it felt like, hey, we already went to our bench. We didn't start our quarterback. You did start your quarterback. Then you ran him out there longer than we thought, and then all of a sudden you're running your number two out there like deep into the third quarter, and we're just getting thumped. So I thought this was a good sort of even matchup, which I don't know if that's a great thing for the 49ers, but then again, it's preseason.
Yeah, the way I see it, we're one more game away from all this, and finally the real football gets here.
Yeah.
Like, preseason is for the teams and all that. Get this off my TV, please. One more week, and then we got a little bye week, and then week one's finally here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be super, super exciting. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we have some A's to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit of A's, a little bit of Giants. We will get back to the 49ers late in the show. If anything...
We got something else we're going to talk about, too. That's going to be pretty fun, and this little baseball thing.
Oh? Okay.
Hey, if you're hitting a batter, be careful.
Yeah, that was a little
wild. Be careful,
wild.
Yeah, be careful.
That was a little wild. Victor Robles lost.
We'll talk about him.
He lost his mind.
Yes.
He lost his mind. All right, we're the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Be back in just a minute.